Hi, we're Josh
and Arielle Wamsley,
owners of Green Valley Tree LLC, based in North Windham.
We're proud to sponsor Connecticut East this week and to serve the communities of Windham and New London counties with our tree removal and plant healthcare services.
Visit our website at greenvalleytreeworks.com for a full list of our services or give us a call on 860-234-4041. We look forward to hearing from you.
Getting a shot in the arm, we visit a COVID vaccine clinic in Essex to see how successful keeping it local is. And a new $30 million community recreation centre for New London. We find out more about this ambitious project, plus a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. COVID vaccinations continue across the country and the state, and every so often the age group and those who can receive vaccinations widens. In Connecticut, the state has opened a few mass vaccination sites, but they are also allowing local health districts to organise vaccine clinics, and in turn, local independent pharmacies are helping in that regard. I recently visited a COVID vaccine clinic in the town of Essex in Middlesex County at their town hall, where the local health district has teamed up with the Nutmeg Pharmacy Group, a small chain of independent pharmacies from the local area. I spoke with many people there, and we begin the report with some comments from two local residents who were getting their vaccination and helping to keep it local.
We just felt more comfortable. You know, it's home.
Was it easier to do it this way?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, look at how crowd all, you know, a lot of, we left the house about 8, you know, and then came in here, so.
I'm a police officer in Essex. I missed the first round because I was in quarantine.
Why did you choose to, like, go through maybe an independent pharmacy rather than go through the state?
It was just the next one available, really. The health director here hooked me up with this one so I could get it.
And how did you find the whole process? Because obviously there's a lot of concern at the moment about vaccine supply, etc. And obviously you are an essential worker as well. So, I mean, it's important that you get, you know, the vaccination. So how have you found the whole process?
Streamlined, fine. Yeah, I don't have any issues with it.
We've worked incredibly well with Nutmeg Pharmacy, who they did a lot of the hard work. They're the ones that were able to go through the state process to get the vaccine, store the vaccine. And what they've asked from the health director, me, and the emergency management, and our fire department, is to set up these vaccination clinics. So the first one was the drive-through. This one today is our indoor clinic. And I wish this was a video, because to see the smile through the masks of all of our seniors, 75 and older, is really just a joy. This is why we're here in our community and to serve our residents in our town and our neighboring towns.
You're very much part of your community as the health director and, as I say, emergency management as well, two incredibly important departments. So what have they been saying to you?
You know, the whole process is a bit challenging as we're all trying to navigate this, both residents and public health professionals alike. Things are changing rapidly. So we do get a lot of phone calls from our residents with questions, and they're very happy they can call here, the Essex Health Department, and talk to me personally with their questions and their concerns and their comments. And we can guide them in the best way we can to help these seniors get their vaccine, because they really do want to be vaccinated. They want to protect their communities. And as well as the other residents who are not eligible yet, they're calling me and asking how to get their senior family members vaccinated and how to go through the process. So they're very happy they can call someone local and get the answers to their questions.
There are lots of options, obviously, for people to be able to get their vaccines and their vaccinations. You mentioned about Nutmeg Pharmacy. It's an independent pharmacy. What would you say were some of the benefits of maybe using them?
To have our local independent pharmacy work with us has been an enormous help. Yes, people can choose their bigger box pharmacies, but they don't have vaccine yet. They're coming online now. And when we've been talking to seniors for the past year to stay inside and do all these things, this is one extra thing to call their local pharmacist and have this vaccine available in their backyards and local and not have to go to some other place across the state. So they're very appreciative of having the partnerships with our local pharmacists. And we work beautifully with them. They call us, we call them, and it works very well in our small town.
Lisa Fazzullo, Director of Health for the Town of Essex, thank you ever so much for the interview.
Very good. Thank you for coming today.
interview with Chris Alenda, pharmacist of Nutmeg Pharmacy in Centerbrook. Chris, we're at the second of your vaccine clinics here in Essex. How has it been going?
Really nice to see the community come together and pull off a clinic like this. You know, we have everyone here at the Essex Health Department, Lisa Fasulo, all her folks here helping pulling this off. We've got volunteers helping with the intake, you know, watching people, monitoring them for the 15 minutes they have to wait after. You know, it's a really great turnout. Everyone is commenting on how smooth it's going. So, you know, it's great.
How important do you think it is to have a local independent pharmacy do something like this? I mean, what do you think the benefits are of you doing this?
The benefits, I think, is to illuminate how important we are in the community. The idea that just because we're an independent pharmacy, you know, people think a smaller operation, but, you know, here we are in the community taking care of everyone. You know, we're working through a difficult situation with the pandemic, and, you know, just because we're small doesn't mean we can't get it done.
It does seem to be working because there is actually some like media reports that more people actually in rural and semi-rural areas are actually being sort of like vaccinated faster than people in big cities. Of course, Essex is a semi-rural area, so clearly it is a success.
Up until now, I honestly haven't really heard of any other pharmacies doing the vaccinations. So, you know, it's a bit surprising. So, you know, I'm hoping the state really is noticing the work we're doing, and, you know, it's, at least for us, it's important we have their support, especially, you know, at the state and federal level. Oftentimes, it's the stuff that is happening behind the scenes that they don't realize how much is affecting us.
And the other thing, of course, is I've been here during the clinic. I've been watching people come up to you. You know, they smile at you. They know you, your wife by name. Clearly, that must put people at ease as well, because you're not just a mysterious face to them. You know, they come and see you, don't they, on a fairly regular basis.
It is the exact opposite of people just being a number. I mean, I know quite literally every single person that walks into my pharmacy by first name. You know, I see them when they're coming in through the door. I already know who it is. There's a lot of places that don't have that kind of personal touch. And, you know, it's more fulfilling for me to have that kind of relationship. It's gratifying. You know, you see people, you go through the difficult times with them, and then, you know, they trust you, and that's how you build the relationship.
Jess Alenda, pharmacist, part of the Nutmeg Pharmacy Group. Jess, thanks for the interview. The COVID vaccine clinics, how have they been going, and what are people saying to you?
People have been really appreciative of the fact that, you know, we're coming so close to them. I've heard a lot of people say that their friends have traveled to New Haven or Hartford or, you know, really far, and they're really grateful that we're right in our community vaccinating them super close to their home. So that's been really lovely. I think my favorite part of this whole process is that we have actually gotten to vaccinate a lot of our group homes. And they are just such a lovely bunch, and they are just so grateful. Yesterday, I had someone kiss my hand. He was just the cutest person ever. So I think that's been my favorite part, is honestly vaccinating our group homes. I know our elderly really need it, but so do our group home patients too.
And what sort of questions are they asking you? Because, of course, we hear so many things about the vaccines, and, of course, there's pluses and minuses and whatever. But, you know, they're sat there with you for that little bit of time. I mean, they're obviously asking questions. What sort of things do they ask you?
I think one of the biggest questions, obviously, is, you know, side effects. Is my arm going to hurt? Am I going to feel sick? You know, those kinds of things. The next biggest question is, when do I come back? They are, I think, so excited. I heard someone today say, make sure you schedule me with her. I want to sit with her again, because, you know, this is a great time for them to, you know, reunite with their friends and get to chit-chat for 15 minutes of their time. So the biggest questions I've really heard is, you know, side effects and when do I come back for my second dose.
Interview with Greg McKenna, chairman of the Nutmeg Pharmacy Group. Greg, you're here today at the second of the Nutmeg Pharmacy Centerbrook's vaccine clinics. Your own location in Higgenham, you've been doing a vaccine clinic. You've also got a clinic that's been undertaken in Moodus. Do you feel that the state should have allowed you to have done this more quickly?
Independent pharmacies were not the first choice. We all know that. But what we have seen, and much like the proposed rollout that big boxes had, where they had a plan, and we're still working that plan, even though they were supposed to be done a lot earlier. We in Higgenham now have almost finished our 75-year-olds, and in fact, we have now also gone and reached out to towns like Chester and towns like Killingworth, and we're actually helping them reach their 75-year-olds as well. You know, what you see is that independent pharmacies really can, because they know their customer and they see that customer three times a week versus, you know, just occasionally, we can get to them quicker. We understand who we have to get to quicker, and that creates a better outcome. It also creates the argument of why, you know, independent pharmacists should have provider status so that we can jump into some of these things. And in fact, I was just talking with the health director here in Essex, and she brought it clearly, very clearly. This is back in the models of the 50s and 60s of why people want to live in a small town, because the independent pharmacist can and does know their customer better, and we can be proactive to helping and create the solutions. You see this not only in Hickenham, you saw it not only in here with in Centerbrook and in Mudus and in Taftville. We can touch our customer quicker and more effectively.
Since recording that interview, Governor Lamont has opened up the next age group for vaccination in the state to those who are 65 and older, and hopes to have these people vaccinated in the next 4 or so weeks. And if you're looking to get the COVID vaccine, remember to register with either the state, your local independent pharmacy or big box pharmacy, or your local health district. Remember, supplies of the vaccines are still limited, so don't expect to get vaccinated straight away, and of course, be patient. The city of New London in southeastern Connecticut has a rich history. It also is one of the poorest cities in the state, and it's had its fair share of controversies over the years. Just recently, the city councillors approved a new $30 million community recreation centre to be built in the city on land at Fort Trumbull. I caught up with Felix Reyes, the director of the Office of Development and Planning for the City of New London, to find out more. Felix, thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, a very interesting story just out about New London City Council approving a community recreation centre. Tell us a little bit more about it.
A community center has been a dream of the city for generations now, and it's a difficult task getting the stars to align regarding location. How do we pay for this? Can we pay for this? How do we make sure we have access for our residents? Has been very difficult for not only this administration, but many generations and administrations beforehand. So we're very excited. We feel we have the right balance. We're in financial position. We have the right site to make this project a reality.
Now, it's been approved at $30 million. Obviously, these things are not cheap. But just to be clear at the moment, I mean, this isn't shovel ready. This is basically just been approved and there's still a way to go, isn't there?
Correct. Right now, what we have for sure is we have a budget and we have a site location, which is one of the parcels of the Fort Trumbull Peninsula. So we know that for sure. The other things that will come, you know, will come and, you know, we'll vet a little bit more is the design of the building, the layout, the program, the business model, you know, behind this, making sure that our residents have access, you know, transportation. So there's a lot that goes along with this type of project, but we feel very confident that we can get there. It's just a matter of, you know, time, process, and approvals.
Let me put this question to you, and I don't mean to be cruel when I say this, and you are a long-term resident. You grew up in New London. People listening to this, especially if they're older, will know that the city over the course of many years has said that they will do many things, and then those projects never came to fruition. What's different about this one?
Well, number one is we've been trending to be financially healthy. That's one of the things. Anytime you have a big project, whether it's a school project or, you know, some type of large capital infrastructure project, the city has always struggled to be able to afford it, have the credit rating, you know, have the fund balance, have a trend of increasing grand list. So you have to be financially healthy enough to do this and be able to project out and show the community that you can stabilize the mill rate while still, you know, building schools and do this type of project. So I think that's where a lot of the uncertainty came in the past. And I'm sure a lot of folks, you know, been in New London for generations, has seen New London struggle economically for a long time. But, you know, like I said earlier on, it really is just being financially healthy, be financially sound, and then having a pipeline of development projects to show and to illustrate both to the residents, both to the creditors, both to the market itself, that we can afford to do this. We can afford to add this debt service to our yearly budget and be able to stabilize our mill rate. That's a big critical issue that the past has struggled with, and we're confident we've been able to achieve that now.
Now, I know the city doesn't like to hear this, but I would be remiss in not asking this question. The location where this proposed recreation center, community recreation center, will be built is an area that historically has been a little bit controversial. Back in 2005 with the Kilo versus City of New London eminent domain. Why did you choose this particular area? Was there nowhere else that this community center could have gone?
Well, of course. I mean, we looked at seven other locations. We looked at Bates Woods. We looked at our old school on Comey Street, which is the old Edgerton Elementary School. We even looked at our downtown municipal lot. You know, what is it if we build a community center right in the heart of downtown? We looked at the high-rise location by State Pier. We looked at Ocean Beach. The reason Fort Trumbull works, and first let me say it's not the best possible location, but it's the best available location. And we can go into that in detail, but best available location means that, hey, do we own it? Does it have infrastructure? Does it have utilities? Do we understand any remediation costs? Is it shovel ready? Is it flat? Is there enough acreage? Is there access? All these things, have costs associated with them. So when you start putting Fort Trumbull and you put it up against other sites and locations that have remediation, have no infrastructure, have no access, have ledge, don't have enough acres, you start to create site development costs that take away from the ability to build programmatic spaces that the community can really use. So do you build it somewhere else and have half of what you can build at Fort Trumbull? Or do you go to Fort Trumbull and build the community center that's a first-class amenity for our residents? And we felt that the Fort Trumbull offered that option.
You used a firm called Brailsford and Dunleavy to conduct the plan and obviously assist you with it. Can you explain, what the rationale was for using this particular firm, and what do you feel that they've brought to this?
Well, they have experience in building centers. This is what they do. This is something that the city has not done in the past. Like anything else, I mean, we have a very proud city, and we've got a lot of subject matter experts. But you really needed to bring in someone that can really start understanding the market, understanding the culture of the city, being able to generate consensus, being able to work with a task force and different groups, being able to put a business model that truly shows the residents, hey, listen, this is how the operations and revenues will, can potentially function. This is how your rec department can be incorporated. This is how the senior center can be incorporated. This is what it's going to cost to actually build. Here's the economic impact. Those are all qualities and challenges that they have, and they were able to deliver. When we first went into this, Brian, there was no guarantee that they would come back with a plan to say, you can actually build a community center. There was no guarantee that. We asked council to bring them in to do an analysis, to create a plan that is specifically and customized for our needs, not something that would have worked in Baltimore or in Philadelphia. It's how do you build a community center with all the attributes of New London, and you needed to bring in an expert in doing that. So Brailsford and Dunleavy was able to deliver on that.
The good news is, of course, they came back and said that it can be done. So let's talk a little bit about the community recreation center. What will it have in it?
Number one, we're a big basketball town, as you know. In this area, I mean, every kid has played at Bartlett Park and at Riverside Park or at Calkins. I mean, we at the Martin Center, and we will have two essentially high school basketball courts in there with multiple rims around. So that's one of the biggest, attractions with big spaces. And those basketball courts could be used for many things. They'll be striped for wrestling meets, for volleyball, for camps, and a ton of other indoor activities. It'll have a swimming pool, a competition swimming pool, which unfortunately our kids do not have. We had the high school swimming pool for many years, but that was pretty exclusive use since it was inside of a school. These kids will have that year round, an indoor swimming pool, which I think is exciting for these kids. There's going to be a fitness center. There will be multiple large multi-space classrooms that can be changed out to serve many needs, from technologies to the arts to after-school programs. What else? There's the office of the recreation department will be moved. Hopefully this will be their final stop, at least in my lifetime, where they will have a first-class office to operate. And then I'm sure the outside will have playgrounds and other amenities that we feel are appropriate for this project.
Now, I'm guessing that this isn't free to you. So is there sort of like membership fees? Talk us through that situation.
Yeah, so nothing's free. And I think it's irresponsible to make things free. And the reason I say that is because one of the biggest hurdles that we had to overcome is that we had to build a building that's sustainable, not just environmentally or infrastructure and technology, but sustainable and being able to maintain the building year to year. So that $30 million asset doesn't depreciate over time because, you know, that leaky roof wasn't fixed, that bent basketball rim was never fixed, the bathroom toilet, you know, those are the things that hurt us. That was our Achilles heel. That's always been the Achilles heel of the city. And that's how we lost the Martin Center. The Martin Center depreciated in value so much that the building wasn't an asset anymore. It turned into a liability for the city. We don't want that to happen. So we have to create a membership base, but it is based on household income. You know, we built this community center with New London first in mind, and keeping them first in mind was to not make it free. We felt it needed to have constant flow of investments to make sure that we're not putting the entire burden of the maintenance of the building on the taxpayers, and making sure that we keep the community center first class. So it's membership based, it's income based. I'm confident we will have, you know, scholarships. There are going to be families that can't pay anything, and then those are the families that we have to work one on one with to make sure that those kids have access, and also our seniors as well.
As we said, it's not shovel ready yet, but it has been agreed by the council, and that's one of the biggest hurdles, and, you know, bonding of about $30 million. Do you have a timeline as to when you would like to see this community center open?
There's a reality, and then there's what the mayor wants. So I would say if the mayor was on with me, he'd say he wanted to open next year, you know, by the end of next year. But I think the reality is that we still have a long way to go with approvals. We still have to get this through planning and zoning. We have to work with RCDA, you know, the site plan approvals that have to be done. There's probably some environmental remediation that has to occur. So there's, you know, there's a lot that has to happen first. But to answer your question, I would say, you know, best case scenario, the beginning of 2023, mid-23, I would say likely the fall of 2023, I would like to see us cut the ribbon on this center.
Well, Felix Reyes, Director of the Office of Development and Planning for the City of New London, thanks ever so much for giving us an update on what is a very exciting project for the City of New London. We will be following it. And thank you again for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you. And I look forward to any future discussions about this project. I would love to see, Brian, you and I just continue to talk as this process goes through all the way through the opening. It'd be fun.
Absolutely. Thank you again.
Take care.
Green Valley Tree LLC is proud to sponsor Connecticut East This Week. Contact Green Valley Tree LLC for all your tree removal and plant health care needs and more. Find us at greenvalleytreeworks.com or call 860-234-4041.
Time now for a look at some of the other stories making the headlines in the region recently. In the Connecticut Examiner this week, amid finger-pointing over who bears responsibility for approving a new gas-fired plant in Killingly, seemingly at odds with the state's goals for zero carbon energy, at least one state lawmaker says she wants the legislature to stop the plant from being built. State Senator Christine Cohen has introduced a bill proposing a moratorium on new fossil fuel plants in Connecticut, a move that would halt approvals for the 650-megawatt Killingly Energy Center that Governor Lamont says he doesn't want but can't do much to stop himself. State Senator Norm Needleman, co-chair of the Energy and Technology Committee that would first need to approve Cohen's bill, said he wasn't in favor of going around a regulatory process that is already well underway to stop the Killingly plant and others from being built. In the day this week in New London, a city man was charged with operating a drug factory near a school, according to police. Corey Harris, 20, of 172 Ashcroft Road, was charged with operating a drug factory and possessing drugs, including narcotics, with intent to sell within 1,500 feet of a school, according to New London Police Department. Harris, who lives near New London High School, was arrested after police went to his home to execute search and arrest warrants for another person. In addition to operating a drug factory, Harris was also charged with two counts of possession of narcotics, two counts of possession of narcotics with the intent to sell, two counts of possession of a controlled substance, possession of narcotics within 1,500 feet of a school with the intent to sell, and altering the serial number on a firearm. In the Norwich Bulletin this week, Amazon representatives gave the clearest picture so far of how a proposed company distribution warehouse planned for construction on the former dog track property in Plainfield will operate. During a recent Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, Jessica Schumer, an economic development manager for Amazon, gave members a day-in-the-life look at how the last-mile factory will run. Schumer said for 10 months of the year, approximately 30 18-wheelers would arrive at the Lathrop Road facility during the overnight hours, more during peak holiday months, to start unloading packages ordered by customers through smartphones and computer screens. Such orders typically get delivered via the US Post Office, UPS, or the Last Mile option. Those drivers will be third-party contractors trained by Amazon. Between 300 and 400 are expected to work at the Plainfield site, who arrive in waves of 160 vehicles during the morning hours and depart in vans. During a typical 10-hour shift, the drivers will deliver within a 45-minute delivery area. Ryan Brace, the town's assistant planner and zoning and wetlands officer, said his office is just waiting for a state traffic review report on the project. In the Middletown Press this week, more than half of all doses of COVID-19 vaccine given in the state as of February the 3rd were given to white people, according to data released by the State Department of Public Health recently. The data also showed that 5.2% of doses were given to those identifying as Hispanic, 3.4% of doses were given to those identifying as Black, and 2.6% of doses were given to those identifying as Asian. The state reported that 6.2% of doses were given to those identifying as being of multiple race, and just under 18% of doses were administered to those who gave their race as other. A press release from the state pointed out that there are limitations in the data. It confirmed huge racial disparities in vaccine administration, a concern that's been expressed by many state and nationwide. As we open up the vaccine program to individuals 65 and over, we are redoubling our efforts to ensure that vaccine is reaching the communities and populations who have been disproportionately impacted by COVID-19, said Acting DPH Commissioner Dr. Deirdre Gifford. And in the Chronicle this week, the town of Mansfield is awaiting state funding for two projects that will connect new trails to existing trails locally, expanding passive recreation opportunities in town. During a recent town council meeting, Mansfield town manager Ryan Ellsworth said the State Department of Transportation has already approved the project to be funded, but the funding has not come in yet. He said the Public Works Department is moving forward with designs and plans. The trails will be built at two locations. One of the projects involves the construction of a new multi-use trail to the existing 5-foot-wide sidewalk at the Maple Road intersection along Route 275, connecting to the existing 8-foot-wide trail at the intersection of Separatist Road. Ellsworth said the two projects combined will cost $2.45 million, and in next week's Connecticut East this week, we talk with three members of the organization Political Action Connecticut, or PACT, on the topics of racial wealth gaps, reparations, and racial economic justice in America, and how the conversation currently is centered on race and skin color as a singular concept or minority status, and not addressing the important issue of lineage and the unique suffering of Black American descendants of slavery. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East, where you can also listen to the show again on demand. And please like, follow, and share on your social media platforms too. I'm Brian Scott-Smith. Thank you for listening.